I'm happy there's traps here without red.
I gotta represent. That's right.
Charge the ion accelerator. It's time to forge the narrative.
Episode 400, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We are the Ball of Souls podcast. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
They said we couldn't do it. They said we were crazy for trying. And look at you. Look at you here, Paul. 400 episodes. You're a madman.
And Tanya Gates.
Hi, everybody.
I'm not sure anybody said we couldn't do it because we just do it this thing.
I don't think anyone predicted, and we certainly couldn't do it without the folks listening and without y'all showing up every week. So, you know, thanks to everyone involved, including those that have, liked, shared, and subscribed, listened to the episodes, left us some 5-star reviews, left comments on YouTube or on the webpage, or sent in stuff to the website and Facebook. I mean, thanks, everybody. I mean, seriously, I don't think when this started, if I thought, it'd be going on this long. I know I love Warhammer 40,000. So that's, that was true then. That was true at episode one. It's true at episode 400.
This is sheer density of, I think I must speak every week. People seem to tune in and enjoy it. And so thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it.
What we're going to talk about now is culture crafting for organized play. I say organized play, and I don't necessarily mean tournaments. I mean any type of event thing that you want people to come and show up and play. And I will say that I really want to not come off as like too preachy or know-it-all or anything. These are only suggestions about if you want a certain outcome, or you want a certain type of participation, or you want to encourage certain behaviors or attitudes or whatever at your events. It is rarely by accident, and sometimes you need to kind of set the stage for these things to happen, no matter what it is.
Absolutely, and I think there's something that comes up. It's almost like clockwork in the competitive scene, or the organized play scene. Every, somewhere between 3 and 6 months, something comes to a head. There is some kind of controversy or something that a section of the community doesn't agree with. And we get to evaluate, where are we at? Why are we here? What do we want to change? And a lot of that comes back to people having different perspectives on what they want things to look like. And I think we're here to talk about how not so much you can have it all, but everybody can be, feel respected, included, and part of.
Well, I'll say this from, each time we talk about these things, is that the tournament organizers, the event organizers, are really taking on all the risk, like everything. Sometimes it's financial, sometimes it's personal, sometimes it's reputation. There's all kind of things that they're taking on that burden. And so I think that we also need to kind of grant them some grace about trying to put on the event that's in their mind, their vision, whatever they want to see happen. And, there's all different kind of degrees. Sometimes some people are like, oh, I really want to have an event where everyone comes and has the best time in their life. Okay, well, that's great. But how do we get there? Some people may say, I want to crown, no matter how many players we start with, I want to crown one undefeated player. I want there to be everyone to know that this is the champion of champions for this day, this event. I want to reward the best hobby. There's all kind of objectives you can have here.
Exactly right. And we're going to speak about this a little bit from the TO point of view, because I think the TO sets a lot of the frameworks that we, the players or the customer, so to speak, buy into. And if you want to think about it like that, it's a really weird metric to try and put into those terms. Like, a TO is providing experience and the player is the customer. That almost doesn't work so well for this application, because at the same time, the TO is crafting the experience, but also kind of pushing the customer towards what they want them to push towards. As in, well, I suppose it's, a restaurant, you don't order pie, is a good analogy that I just pulled out just then. But that's kind of what this is. This is like a spaghetti restaurant. If you come in here, these are all the selections of spaghetti, but you're expected to order and enjoy spaghetti when you arrive.
let's follow that out. Let's see where that goes. All right. So
specific one, because I can talk about pasta quite extensively.
pasta's good. let's talk about when you're really birthing one of these ideas. and what it may take to get it from your mind to publicizing out to maybe the internet or your play group or your peer group or whatever, and then eventually everyone showing up and playing, and then you having some mechanism potentially for rewarding certain outcomes at your event.
Well, because if you wanted to look at it like this, because there's the macro and the micro discussion here. The micro discussion, probably we can talk about that at the later part of this episode, which is probably the interactions that we have with each other as players and as engagers with the content and the community. The little interactions we have on a daily basis with somebody are, how'd you paint that? What do you think about this unit? Blah, 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 blah. But then there's the TO stuff is probably the macro stuff. The TO stuff is probably the macro stuff. The stuff like the big forums, I suppose me and you, Paul, we think like Daka Daka, Boulder and Chainsaw, all those things. They're the macro engagements for our community.
Recording this craft. Podcast in 2018. Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I've only been here since, like actively playing the game since like 2019. I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
You know, those big forums where
what's a forum?
Exactly. You know, gone the way of Tumblr. But yeah, all this stuff is really the macro things, the things where we kind of set the stage for each other.
I have an idea that I think that you guys have maybe like glossed over here, but when you said like your goal could be, I want everybody to have the greatest time ever, to me, you're setting yourself up for failure, because that may be a goal, but it is so vague that you have no way of measuring that outcome. Do you know what I mean?
I will say that when you're planning a business, like one of when you're writing your mission statement, you should seek to make it as unique to yourself as possible, or your mm-hmm. business, your entity, as possible, mm-hmm. so you can measure it in success. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you 100%. And I think that if you're going to state that as your goal, you have to have a roadmap that gets you there. And I'd like us, if we can, to maybe suggest some things that might help craft that roadmap during the course of this, for whatever that is, for whatever your desired outcome is.
I think that like refining that idea as much as you can before you even sit down to start planning an event is really going to help you in the long run, because then you'll have a very like clear vision for what you want the day to look like. And I mean, I'm saying this, I've never been a tournament organizer for Warhammer. I have been a tournament organizer for sports before. And when people go into the process of planning a tournament on a massive scale, you could always tell when you step into a venue when there was no vision at the start. So, yeah, I think that your vision needs to be clear.
Yeah, I can see that. How do you go about learning that vision? How do you go about establishing it or figuring out what you want to do? Because yeah, if you were right, if you do just want to give the best experience for the players, then it's obvious that you should go to the players and ask them what they want. Get an idea of what your demographic is in your local area. And if you want to have a strong event that goes the distance, you should first and foremost appeal to the people in your local area, right? There's no good trying to get the Europeans to attend your, you know, Mississippi event if like the 20 locals won't go.
The scene is real big in France, and I'm going to replicate that here. And
yeah, exactly.
It might not work out. No, you know,
spot on. Now, how do you guys go about that? What do you guys thoughts? How do you find out how do you outsource that or figure out what people want from an event in your area?
Yeah, I think there's a couple different ways you can go about it. Exactly like you're talking about engaging them. What do you want to see? I mean, if you have a local play group or whatever, and a few people consistently don't show up for organized play events, then you might want to ask them why not. I mean, they may have different reasons, right? But you're just collecting data at that point. You don't have to necessarily bend to anyone's will you don't have to compromise on your vision. But if you're wanting to maybe set a better stage or different stage, I said better, but that's a judgment call. You maybe wanting something different. You want to engage with different areas, and you got to think that, especially if your play group is large enough, the one person you hear from, they could be kind of a sounding board for however many 5-10 people behind them same way.
Spot on. I mean, I know people in my local scene who don't attend tournaments because they had a bad experience, say, you know, XYZ years ago, and it turned them off attending. Now, a lot of the times, I mean, tournaments have come a long way. I mean, active judging was a dirty word when I first started, like when I first started playing. And active judging, and on top of that, everybody playing the same format. There's a lot of reasons and ways you can engage people and ask them, like, what turned you off back then and what would have to change to get you back?
Yeah. And look, you can't please everybody. I don't want to like go into this thinking that you can please everyone and the right answer, there's one answer, one magic bullet for everything, because there is not.
There is, and Tanya is spot on. You don't want to set your expectations too high. And on top of that, culture crafting comes with a lot of responsibility. Like, you're setting the stage, you. And so your vision has to be something that's respected, that's of a certain amount of integrity, and that will survive a certain amount of scrutiny.
Yeah.
And if you're going to step up on that podium, you have to be ready for some scrutiny, and especially ready for some naysaying, because most of the time, everything you do is going to be questioned.
Well, yeah, because everyone's going to have an idea, because, you know... there's no license to post that idea. They can do whatever they want. I think you're right. You have to, but people will respect the thought process and I guess passion behind it. And even if you don't know exactly what to do, sometimes you can take inspiration about what not to do, because you can look at something like, well, that didn't, you can look at someone else's idea and like, that wasn't very successful. So let me do something different. And then use that as my base, potentially.
I would also argue that if you're going to all of the trouble to create an event and you want everybody there to have a good time, yes, you do need to listen to what your player base wants. But at the same time, you also have to create something that you're going to be proud of. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you are making, you know, a narrative event because that's what your local group has said that they wanted, but you don't know anything about narrative events, like, you have to put something into that event that you can be also super hyped about, just to make sure that you have like enough energy to get through it, because planning events, it takes a lot of brain power and a lot of time, and you just want to make sure that at the end of the day you can look back and just feel really great about what you did.
So let's talk about, so we'll break down a few things that tournament organizers do to culture craft. First off, of course, is your player pack. You know, you set which, of course, if you weren't to run anything but 2,000 points in this day and age, you'd automatically signal this isn't a top tier, this isn't an ultra competitive event. We're not here to exclusively reward, you know, the option to exclusively reward excellence would probably get taken away. And you'd be like, okay, we want some people who are just going to enjoy playing, you know, at whatever level or whatever scale, et cetera. There's just straight off the bat, that's just one thing you can do to craft or change what people expect from it. You can also do it by having, you know, paint Rubik's, paint scores, sports scores. Comp absolutely is a thing that culture crafts, but that in itself becomes its own discussion if you want to go down those things. Now, I don't know how many of those things I just ripped out people might not be familiar with. Do you guys want to break down?
Well, I want to challenge just a slight bit on that, is that the point level can be whatever you want it to be. And there's lots of other contributing factors to it that add up. And I think you're exactly right. What you want to ultimately reward, you have to telegraph to people. You have to put it out there so they can prepare for it. That's how you're going to get people ultimately pleased with your event, is that if you set the expectations for them, and then once they, you know, run through the life cycle, whether it be a day or 2 days or 3 or 4 day event, you know, kind of thing, once they get on the other end of it, is if their expectations were met. Did you operate and did you perform in the way that you signaled and published that you would?
Yes, spot on. I suppose the most topical way people talk about culture crafting or crafting of the experience now is through the terrain, through the table layouts. And people are going high and low trying to figure out what's perfect, what's optimum, and what works for a most enjoyable experience. And everyone's going back and forth, up and down. This isn't something that's going to get solved soon. It's probably going to be, by the end of the edition, we'll look back and think that was probably the best one. But until then, it's going to keep evolving. But you can signal from, you know, the start of a player pack that, you know, what is going to be rewarded here? What kind of play style will be rewarded here? Just by through showing people what the layouts might be, or what they can expect to play on when they come to your an event. Now, it's almost like that goes too far down the culture crafting, because that's kind of micromanaging almost, which to an extent, unfortunately, I think 9th edition needs, and I think every edition so far in the game, well, in the modern era of the game, has needed some kind of this. But what do you guys think about that statement?
You can't take it for granted that people can read your mind.
That's a good statement.
Like, step one is, like, no, you can say a certain thing, but if you don't demonstrate what that is, then it leaves room for interpretation. And so people can bring their own slant and therefore potentially, taint's a terrible word, but, co-op what the culture you're trying to do with whatever their impression is. And so being explicit with what you're really intending and demonstrating that through, you mentioned a player pack a couple times, and for folks that don't have any experience with this, just have an idea, I would like to run something in my area or whatever, what we're talking about is a document that outlines certain things, such as how terrain is going to be one put on the board and it utilized, what rules are going to be used for that, what things you're going to, what rankings you're going? Are you gonna reward first, second, and third place? Are they the only ones coming away with a ribbon or whatever? Are you going to have hobby judging? And let me tell you, if you're gonna have hobby judging, which I do encourage, I have been a proponent of objective scoring for points. If you're gonna give actual points to that, that has an influence in the overall rankings of things, I think being objective with your points is the only way to fly. But then I think that when you're awarding the best, since best is, like I was mentioning, but poor, best, you know, whatever subjective words, when you're awarding the best, that can be subjective. But if you're going to give points, be as objective as possible.
Yeah, I agree with all those statements.
Sports. If you're going to award things that have these types of things, you want to make sure that it is documented in your teaser, your flyer, your pamphlet on your message board post, your group post.
I've been a TO, and the most satisfying, like, if someone's going to scrutinize me or question a choice, the most satisfying I can do is be like, it was in the place back. You're like, why is this the way it is? It was in the place back. What are we doing about this? Check the place back.
and that comes up. Greatest. So let me give you an example of where I've also been a tournament organizer. I still dabble in it with events, and I really love the culture of this aspect of the hobby. I think it's a natural extension of my hobby, and I hope other people, if they can't do it now, they'll do it in the future, kind of thing. You'll go one step further with that, is that sometimes there are, you know, are you allowing this particular model from this particular book? Are you using XYZ FAQ? You don't want to leave that up for interpretation on the day of the event. Once people have already planned their list, they have already built their list, they've invested that hobby time, they've invested those hobby dollars. And then when they get to your event, they find out that that what they brought is not legal for your event. And there's a problem. And then therefore that taints their impression of you, their impression of the event, the impression of maybe the store that you're hosting the event at, or venue, or community, or whatever. And that could all be avoided as long as you're explicit in the front end.
So we've talked about this from a TO and organizer's point of view. I suppose the more relevant to the vast majority of the people probably listening to this is to talk about it from a players and engagers point of view, possibly a customer if we want to go down that route. Where do you think the best place is to start culture crafting at the kind of the interaction level, the micro level, or the player level?
Well, one of the things that we've often kind of touted on the show is that if the gaming club in your area, the crew, the local people at your store aren't playing the way you want to play, and I shouldn't say that's, I don't mean that like they only play 1,000, you want to play 1,500 points. You know, they only play Crusade and you want to play match play or whatever. You've got to start, you know, creating some noise about what you want to do.
And I suppose everybody has a voice in our community. Well, hopefully everybody can find their voice in our community. And I think even G-Dub has set pretty much come out for the first time in the last couple of years and said there's no real wrong way to play Warhammer. Like, if you want to just house rule everything, go right ahead. If you want to do, you know, take away all the keywords, apply whatever keywords you want, you go right ahead. As long as there's two players in agreement, you know, so much the better. That's all you really need.
Hey, once you get the toys, they're yours. Do whatever you want with
them. Yeah, that's exactly right. They already got the box for it. They don't really mind as long as they're having fun.
So I do think you've got to start to kind of get your foot in that. And if you want to, I mean, if you're looking at these and you are looking at, from your point, I guess what you're saying is when you're looking at someone's documentation, let's just say it's just a post this Saturday, 2,000 point event, show up at 9:30 a.m. or whatever. You know? ask some questions. I don't know a single person, a single organizer that doesn't like to answer questions about their event. Because they ultimately, even if they don't know how to communicate it, they do want you to show up and have a good time.
It's true.
I think that's like the goal of a solid 95%+ of everyone that I've known that's ever tried to organize a tournament.
Mm. Yeah, most of the time you just want to put on a good show for your mates.
Yeah, yeah.
But so one of the things one of my most favorite things that a TO can do, and I think this is one of the most favorite things that I'll encourage anybody who plays our game to do. If there's ever like, I call it like a second half, like if there's ever a second half to your event, as in like people are going out for food or going to a bar or something afterwards, go. Just go wherever it is. Even if you only go for half an hour, even if you only go for 45 minutes or whatever, even if you only go and you just have like a bloody soda water or something, just go, enjoy, engage. I just find it one of the most rewarding and fun parts of the whole hobby.
Yeah, commune with the people that have come to invest a portion of their time. That could be the only time they get out for the month.
And a lot of culture crafting happens there, especially if that's something that's organized by the TO, organized by a certain person in your group. Everyone kind of has that person. You guys ever, you know, you guys want to go away for an event and you always want to make sure what's his face is coming because you know he'll organize the Airbnb for you. I've got that friend.
As a team captain for several teams, I am not there for my generalship is the fact that I will print off everyone's army list and arrange the hotel room.
Exactly that. Everyone needs that mate. Everybody. And if you don't need that mate, chances are you are that mate.
Yeah, good chance. I know this is like a ponderous topic, and I'm going to take us back to the very beginning, is that once you start hatching this idea, begin to write it down and to assemble this document, whether it be just something you put in a group post or an event invite or something, because people are going to know it, and you want to think about it in a way, asking yourself the question as if you were not inside your own head.
Mm, yeah, spot on.
I think you have to in this day and age, because there are certain things up for interpretation, and then recognize the fact that there are lots of build up, the things that maybe you take for granted, maybe your player group takes for granted, but the guy or the person coming from the next city over doesn't have the same frame of reference as you.
That's true. That's real true.
You've got to figure out a way to communicate it that is representative of the ideas of whatever that good time is that you have in your head.
Tell us about the culture, Tanya. Tell us about the culture of your competitor, of your scene, of your organized play scene. Tell us about the things that make it unique, and tell us about why you think those things are important.
And the community building that's been going on in your area also.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I first started playing dabbling in 2013, we didn't really have a local sort of community. And my husband, I think around like 2019, he was just like, I want people to play with. I want more people. Like, I know that there's, because he worked at the game store. He's like, I know that there are people buying models and collecting. Let's just make an online space so that we can all come together and get games. And having him, and I would not say that my husband is a competitive player. I would say that he is a very capable casual player, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. right? Like, he could kick your butt, but he just also really likes to play the models that he likes. So for me, I think he was like the perfect person to start this community, because he is very in tune with the competitive players and friends with a lot of them. But also he's very in tune with like the casual players and the hobbyists. I think because he's sort of like our patriarch in the area, it's him and Alex McDougall are kind of like the culture crafters in my local area. They've sort of taken it upon them to really emphasize that sportsmanship is what makes us who we are as a community. Mm. So in our local tournaments and things like that, whoever gets the best sportsman award usually gets the best prize.
That's cool.
Yeah, because it's more important that everybody has a good time with you than it is that you kick everybody's butt. So for them, they usually have just like a big table full of prizes, and there's usually like an Indominus box or a Dominion box or something like that. So like, also Creature Caster takes care of us. So normally whoever gets sportsman gets like first kick at the can and gets the best prize that's on that table. So that's like kind of the big thing that culture crafts our competitive area.
That's really cool. I like that a lot. I like the vision that would have been behind, well, what I can assume is the vision behind that being the motivations and things. I think it's really cool.
What you reward is huge. I mean, that says when people are looking at that, that's going to inform how they approach the day. And you can set that up in a variety of different ways. And I think that being deliberate with that is huge.
I spot on. I agree as well. My community is really interesting. Australia's always been it's a weird place. We have weird animals. We have a weird demographic of people playing 40K. Up until recently, my community was very much comp. We played a lot of comp, and then when we didn't play comp, we played a lot of mixed scoring to determine the winner.
Explain what you mean by comp.
So comp, as in like the TO would put it upon themselves, or you know, there was a system created called community comp that we would play the game within. It was almost like think about how I like to explain comp like this. Think about how for the gamers out there, Counter-Strike, yeah, was a patch to Half-Life. The Half-Life engine got patched and made Counter-Strike. Comp is like a patch on top of the game 40K.
There are army list restrictions. You have to build within a certain criteria. It is not a free-for-all of whatever codex it is. There are certain things you have to do to make your list legal outside of just filling up an attachment.
Exactly right. And so all the way through, most of the way through 6th and all the way through 7th edition, we played in that. And then it tried to exist in 8th edition, but then it kind of dropped off. As soon as the more active G-Dub came in balancing the red game, the less that kind of stuff became reasonable or realistic. But and so up until recently, you weren't rewarded for straight excellence on the table. You're rewarded for a bunch of different things. You needed to have some level of excellence, but you also needed to perform, you know, in an admirable place, respectable fashion with your opponent to get a decent sports score. And you also needed to get have your hobby of a certain stand that got you a paint score. You could, if you wanted to, just go for excellence and get best general. And I think there's a lot of things like that out there. You know, they've always got that best general is, and then there's the best overall, and then there's like Ren Man and stuff like that. But here, everything was, and that was the thing to go for. You wanted to get best overall. That was the thing that was encouraged because the community supported that. Everyone wanted to play beautiful armies against good, fun opponents. And also, you know, if you're great at the game, you should be rewarded for that. But there was a certain demographic within that who just didn't really care about the hobby. They weren't there, that weren't interested in that. And they were just there to try and get best general. And they wanted to play at the highest level against the best opponents and play the best 40K that they could. And now that's kind of what we're rewarding now. Like we have, everything's been kind of separated out. Best sports is an arbitrary, like, so end of the event, you vote for the people you enjoy playing the most and they're the best sport. End of the event, or, you know, halfway through day one or at lunchtime, whatever, you go around and you'll decide who's your favorite army. And there's, you got some things there. And then at the end, whoever's got the best score overall is the winner, the first, second, thirds. And it's really changed a lot about that. And so it's what also is different there. We have this also another little two kind of caps on top of our scene as well. One of them being our national championships. Like we have a what we call the ATC, the Australian Teams Championships. And so everybody in most states have an aspiration. Well, if you're a competitive player and you're trying to get best general, you'll have an aspiration that you want to be good enough to play for the state, therefore, and then play in the national champs. And then on top of that, you want to be good enough to play for your country. And so everything's kind of looked through that lens, and our culture is crafted a lot through that lens. And what it does is a twofold blade. It means that we've always got this risk of a boys club forming. We've always got this risk that we become elitist or exclusive or whatever, because we have these things that are on top of or beside or running concurrent, where we have ulterior motives to a lot of our events. Like we'll run a team within
games.
Yeah, we'll run a teams event for the purpose of letting the state team practice. But then a lot of people won't want to come because they'll just feel like they're just giving their money to the state team. You know, like, oh, well, they're the best players in the state. They're all on a team together. Why should we come and support that? Mm-hmm. You're literally just going to put our money in their pockets. And that became a thing. We've had to figure out ways of keeping that thing attractive. And what we've done now, we started breaking those teams up. Hey, if you want to be good at the team, show that you can play in a team, make it you, sir, of our state team. You each make a team and you show that you can wield it. You show that you can play and you show that you're worth playing with. And then you can get on, you know. And so that's become a lot more appealing for people. And so that's the way we've tried to alter. And this is the thing about culture crafting as well. It's not set in stone. Nothing is like forever. You don't just get to be like, this is a competitive scene. And we're it's just
always
going
to do this before. This way. That's probably not the right thing to do.
Exactly right. So yeah, the acceptance of evolution as well, I think, is a big deal when crafting a culture and paying attention. Like, you know, it's no good being, you know, being on the national team if there's no one to play with. There's only 8 players in the state. Therefore, you're on the national team because there's no other players because everyone gave up.
You kind of fell into one of my traps.
I'm happy there's traps here without red.
I gotta represent. That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
I gotta represent. So when you mentioned that some people don't care about the hobby or they're not interested in competing on the hobby side of it.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say don't care about the hobby, although some don't, right? I think that you can expand the number of people who do care. And so if it's important to you by maybe trying to figure out why some percentage of them don't care and influencing that through how accessible you make it or how you reward it.
That's spot on, dude. And I think this is – so I've only had some limited experience with the 30K community, the Horus Heresy community, but they seem to be very attached to wanting fully painted, beautiful, gorgeous armies, which I can think – there's a certain pageantry that I believe comes with playing the Horus Heresy. There's a certain amount of – you want to be able to imagine what Isvan was when you're playing, you know, XYZ army or – et cetera, Legion. And I think they're a really good example for a community that really encourages that. I'll put it out there right now. Some go too far. Some go too far and say, hey, if you're not beautifully painted, if you're not perfectly painted, don't come. Or like, you know, you'll be looked down upon if you do. And a lot of others don't. Like, you know, bring them base coated if you're going to base coated. You won't get points, you know, on that metric or that rubric. But, you know, come enjoy whatever you got, wherever you're at. And that's the vast majority, of course.
Not everybody has the ability, time, or money to have the showcase army. That's just – and so if you don't want that to be a barrier or you want people to feel confident enough to bring – their armies that don't meet that highest standard, you know, that that perfectly color blended Photoshop picture perfect army or whatever.
Well, it's
then
not attainable. The goalpost different. Yeah, it's just not attainable for so many people. I look at some of the armies that I play against and my jaw just drops every time I look at them. And when they pick up their models just as easily as I pick up my models, I'm like, bench up, dear savior. But, you know, I think I paint quite well. I think I paint to a good standard. I don't paint anywhere near some of the stuff I play against, which is like world-class, like golden demon standard stuff at times. And, you know, that's not an expectation that should be put on everybody. I look at some of my friends' stuff. I'm like, there's no way you can expect a new player to want to play this game if that's the expectation.
Mm-hmm. I also think that you somewhat have to like look at where your community's at. You know, like if your local community has like 5 people in it, probably putting a lot of restrictions on or like putting a big barrier to entry into your event is probably not going to work out in your favor.
Mm-hmm. In general, right? Across all things, not just hobby stuff, right?
Right. Like if one of your goals is I want to have like 20 people come to my event and you only have 5 in your local group, you kind of need to look at ways to make it more accessible, whether that be appealing to newer players or maybe making it a doubles event so you can like make... like pair up new players with veteran players or something to reduce the barrier of entry. That may be where you need to start if you want to create a certain type of event with a certain amount of players.
Well, that's a great segue because we're culture crafting. Well, you know, a lot of us are old dogs and trying to teach old dogs new tricks isn't as hard as people make out, but it's not always the easiest thing. But how do we go about culture crafting an environment for the new player and making it as easy, as acceptable, and as rewarding for them as anybody else?
That can be a tall order because if they are brand new, they're new to your community, you don't have the finger on their pulse. They may not be, you don't know that they're viewed your post or came into the store one time and then left because they didn't feel like they could interact. That's a great question. Let's take a break. Then we'll come back and jump right into that.
Beautiful.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back, and we're going to answer that really tough question of how do you engage new players, people that do not normally come and play in your circles? How do you build and grow organized play events and influence the way that you want people to interact at your event?
Yeah, well, that's a big thing, isn't it? Because, I mean, I see my local scene. My local scene has gotten quite competitive. It's quite high on the competitive front. And there's competitive events, and then there's the old school ones that are a bit, they're changing at their own pace with kind of the new way G-Dub's taking the game. As in G-Dub, you know, actually saying that, you know, competitive events should be rewarded, should be a thing, but doesn't have to be the way you enjoy. Which I love, the three ways to play or whatever it is. And we had a pretty stagnant period, especially in kind of the was it start of 8th or was it towards the middle of 8th, where it was obvious that the power curve was going up, 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 and it was obvious that some people weren't willing to go that way with things. And so we had I remember going to about 4 or 5 events in a row where there was the same kind of 10 people, and then a kind of a revolving door of about 30 or 40 others who would just come for one event, maybe come back the week, the event after the next one or whatnot. But they were very irregular patrons of the event and then kind of dropped off. But obviously there's a lot of lockdowns and things possibly keeping people away. And so, yeah, it's those people who come and enjoy an event once, maybe once a year, once every 2 years, 3 years. They're the guys who I feel like and ladies who I feel like I want to appeal to with events that I run. I want them to feel engaged and feel welcome and feel like they can walk through the door.
Yeah, we're not talking about the diehards that are going to show up no matter what. Like, right. Think about it this way. So there's some events that if you just say that you're, you know, giving tournament circuit points for or whatever, people will show up no matter what you publish on the piece of paper because they want those points. And that is, doing something like that is a way to influence the culture of your event.
Spot on.
But so we're not talking about the people that will come to tournaments for tournament's sake, because they'll show up, even though I think you're better off if you have like a structure for them to interact with, because you still want them contributing to the overall community, the spirit of things, whatever you're trying to, whatever feelings you're trying to impart, you know, for the folks that come and participate. You want a structure there.
Is there a tournament structure? So, I mean, G-Dub there with in Orlando, they did seeding, like the first 4 games seeded you for the next whatever how many games, 3 or 4 games. Is there like all those, like, you know, the free-for-all is around Robin, there's teams, there's doubles. Is there a format that you guys think is the most appealing to a new player?
Like a brand new player?
Or, you know, like somebody who's a irregular.
Or could be a brand new player. What do you think would get people, like, from your perspective, is there a particular format that would have maybe enticed you to go to a tournament sooner than you did?
Well, see, I actually quite like the seeding idea, because if you are a new player who are brand new, it's likely on day 2 or day 3 that you'll be playing people who are brand new. You know, it's much more likely to be playing people who are brand new to the game or at your skill level than, say, you know, in a open event where, you know, it's just you play the person closest to you on battle score. But at the same time, those things like Orlando, yeah, 3 days, I can tell you right now, ain't that appealing for a new player. You know, no. You got to be up for the grind.
Yeah, so for me, I think I probably would have been convinced to go to a tournament earlier if it had been some sort of doubles where I could go with somebody who is like more established in the hobby, who maybe had contacts, and who could sort of like show me how it all worked. Something like that would have made it a little bit more, like, I wouldn't have been racked with so much social anxiety like I was in my very first tournament that I went to.
Like, bring your best friend to work day.
Yeah, exactly. Bring your bring your new friend to the tournament day. Yeah.
That's a beautiful piece of culture crafting. Like saying, hey, the best players in our scene aren't these, you know, demagogues or, you know, tyrants that are going to hold you down. Here's like a huge bunch of them that are willing to pair up with you and pick you up, and you know, want you to achieve and do the same things that they're doing. I think that's a great statement for a community to take on.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't get that. However, I did have, and he wasn't a TO at this one, but Alex McDougall did sort of like take me under his wing for my first tournament. So like in between rounds, he would come and check in on me and be like, okay, so like, how did it go? What did you learn? Did you have fun? And like, what's your plan for your next matchup? And like all this. So like, that could be something too, like saying it's beginner friendly, but giving an extra resource like that, like a buddy maybe that can come and check in with the new players. I think that could be something that might be a little bit more supportive and make them feel comfortable.
Absolutely. And it's not something that, you know, needs to be, if you are new here, you must have buddy kind of deal. It could very well be like, oh, he's here if you want it.
Well, let me try to get into some specifics here. Is that when you say something, you can publish that something is beginner friendly, but then how do you actually make it beginner friendly?
Yeah, spot on.
And so there are, and by the way, I love the way the Orlando tournament worked in events in the past. I have also bracketed players to where they're playing, you know, on day one, they then get seeded into brackets and then they are competing against other people in that bracket for the top bracket slot. That's one way that I encouraged participation across all the games. Mm-hmm. You know, because sometimes if there's only one, here's another thing. If there's only like one winner for your event or one area that is rewarded, people will eventually figure out that they're not on a trajectory to achieve that and they may not want to play. And if they don't play all the games, that could be something that is important to you. And so that could be also important to the other players when they're looking around like, oh, why am I the only one playing the game? I don't know if I like the way this feels. So you have to figure out a way to make it where that doesn't happen.
I've got a little bit of a segue, but also one that I hope to add to that point. How many leagues have you guys been involved in that didn't get to conclusion?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Oh, so many.
How many? I mean, we can talk about D&D parties as well if we want to go down that one. But I think I finished one league. I've probably been in a dozen.
We started a D&D campaign just to try to lead up to Ravenloft, and then we party fell apart before Ravenloft.
Yeah, exactly right. So it's a consistency of engagement is a thing, especially with when we talk about clubs, because I think if we took our TO hats off and just talked about being a club member, being a member of the community, I find clubs is where a lot of culture crafting goes on, especially. So people put up, I see I'm in a couple of clubs and people put up posts saying, oh, XYZ game, XYZ time, want to play competitive, not competitive. Oh, I'm practicing for X, something such and such. And it's always weird that I do see the same competitive people playing the same competitive people and the same non-competitive people playing the same non-competitive people. And when I say non-competitive, I mean people who aren't practicing and something are happy to
people
play.
People that want a theme, they have a different, how they want to spend their hobby time is different than how these other people want to spend their hobby time.
I'm not saying there's anything disparaging there. Their hobby time is just as valuable as anybody's.
Yeah. We all make sacrifices and compromises to get out of the house to go and play, you know, or to assemble our models and that kind of stuff.
Spot on. And so it's interesting to see people not kind of crossing the streams, so to speak, not willing to venture out of their bubbles. And I don't know if this is a huge thing that we can talk about, because it is kind of abstract and it is kind of lot there, but is that a culture? Is that a culture that people
it is? So let's try to break that down into some specifics. And I know that, look, this is just this might only be like episode one of this, but it is, it's a weighty topic and it's many faceted because there's not just one way to do it. And let's look at examples of like Adepticon, Nova, the LVO, and those are things. They're obviously successful events, and they come about like how they made their events radically different. So, and I won't go into the specifics of necessarily because I don't want to just make the show about that. But it's clear that there are multiple ways that you can be successful. So don't let the idea or the fact that what you're considering has not been done before prevent you from trying it. I just think you have to be very specific. And so let's take that new player thing for an example. So if you wanted to encourage new players, then there's kind of a tightrope to walk. Do you reduce the hobby requirements? Do you have to weigh things of, will players be turned away or somehow have a bad taste in their mouth because they might have to play around against a person who doesn't have, they're not battle ready on every single one of their models.
I have the answer to this one.
Okay.
It was in the player pack.
You nailed it. That's step one actually is like, I mean this like unquestionably, no matter what you decide to do, I think you have to write it down and publish it because of that very one. That is one of the myriad of reasons. It will also help you flesh out what your ideas are. And then as people ask questions or you bounce it off one of your good buddies, you know, you update and continue to let it evolve. And that could also include publishing your missions, but we'll get there. We'll try to get there in this episode. And so
we do talk a lot of this from the TO point of view, but we're talking about that because they are like the heads of this, so to speak, but they're only the heads of it because people comply, because they're representing, essentially they're like members of parliament, so to speak. Because when we look to what the culture is defined by, it's usually defined by what people work towards and pushing towards, and they're pushing towards their local major, super major, or, you know, big kind of event or con in their area. Oh, and
let me get a little theoretical on you. Culture is the product of the community.
Exactly. But all of it only exists by the people who participate. Yeah. And so when we talk about it from the TO's point of view, it's up to us, the players, to uphold that vision. Yeah. And buy into it, so to speak.
Oh yeah, but in order for us to buy into it, we got to know what it is. So that's why they got to continue. Mm-hmm. I think that's why step one, write it down. But then if you understand what the hurdles, if you're not a new player, or maybe you are, what were the things that kept you from this, from getting in there, from getting your army done or whatever, like, and then encourage it. Like what I've done in the past is I've tried to thread that needle in a way to continue to get the community to grow is I have sometimes relaxed the hobby restrictions, but I've still given out a hobby award. And this doesn't have to be a monetary award. I mean, it could be a widget. It could be a ribbon. It could be an accolade. It could be a sincere attaboy sent by voice message, you know. Like, you know, you reward it and celebrate it on the day of, still the hobby prize. Because even though you want to get people in the door to start experiencing this, and they may have, you know, again, different barriers to entry, still encourage them to continue to participate as you grow. Because I'll tell you, one of the reasons that like tournament organizers want beautiful armies at their event is so other people show up and say, dang, I got to see a bunch of cool armies. I'm coming back here next time.
Mm-hmm. Spot on. And that's for the new player kind of thing. I mean, you don't run a 3-day 9 gamer and expect to be catering to the brand new wet behind the ears tournament goer. You do a, you know, 3-day one, you know, three game 1-dayer with, like, you know, 1,000 points, 1,500 points, and you work your way up from there. And I think that's a great thing to point out for budding people who want to run events, who don't quite know how to do it. Start small. Find out what people like. Find out who's rocking up and then cater for them. Cater for them. Tell them to bring their friends. Grow from there.
Another thing with new players is that sometimes there's a certain amount of complexity that I like. And I like showing up to a game and I like, you know, placing the terrain myself, you know, trying to win at every stage of the game before the first die is rolled kind of thing. You know, there's that. But that is not how everyone enjoys things or want to engage with things. And that could be intimidating or overwhelming for people that have not been through that or don't have additions past, ghost of, you know, was vestigial memories from editions past influencing what we consider fun. And so, you know, we often talk about publishing your missions before, you know, so people know what to expect at your tournaments. That may actually encourage participation from a new player because they get to see it. They get to kind of, you know, roll it around in their mouth and figure out how they can attack it before they get there, which may make it a little bit more welcoming to them.
I was a newer player in tournaments, but I still had friends who were like very hardened veterans of the tournament circuit. So when they told me that I had to read the player pack, I read that thing cover to cover. And when I looked at the missions, I was still a new player, but it at least gave me the opportunity to go to my friends and been like, okay, like this is what I'm planning to bring and this is the mission, and like to have a little session with them to be able to like bounce ideas off of and sort of like brainstorm a little bit before the day where I played It made me feel a lot more comfortable at the table day of. So I really do think that publishing the missions in the player pack in advance is a really good thing for new players.
If you've got an environment where there you've got 40 seasoned, you know, tournament veterans, and they enjoy all the complexity and do whatever, everything, like Adam, I think you said it earlier, everything is, it's a slider, it's a toggle. You get to flip those switches however you want, but know that each switch that you flip is going to impact someone's experience or potential enjoyment that day, or if they even show up or not.
Exactly right. Anytime you flick one, you could be flicking another one off.
Yeah. And so I just like really encourage people to really examine it and be deliberate. And I'm going to continue to repeat this part, is that what is it, the vision in your mind, no one's going to know exactly what that is unless you communicate it.
Yeah, spot on.
And so continue to get, just, you want to always, I'm going to put that, and I'm going to say it again and over again, because it's so important to communicate. But then what do you communicate? You know, and I think that's they're very important things to telegraph. And that is, what is expected, you know, what type of army list, I mean, what do you allow, what point level, you know, the stuff that you would take for granted, make sure that that's put out there. And then what are the, what's the path to success? What does victory look like? And is it attainable for more than one player? And is it attainable through multiple different categories?
And another thing that you can culture craft with is, like, you know, putting through a judicial system almost, you know, like this is how conflict will be resolved, or, you know, rules interactions will be resolved. This is the FAQs or whatever I'll be referring to. And this is the steps I'll go through to make sure and ensure that as many people enjoy this event as possible. So here's things will be resolved, and this is what we'll be following. No ifs, no buts. And it's really important you stick to it, guys. If you put something like that in play, you know, it's on you to maintain it.
And the same, and let's, one more thing going past that, structuring your event with time brackets. Time is very important to everyone, almost all the time. I know I just used the word to define itself, but it is, whether it, because people need to know what time to show up in the morning, they need to know, they arrange their childcare, they have their morning constitutional, you know, they need to catch a flight on Sunday. You know, there is an infinite number of reasons to why time is important. And so know that and decide how important it is to you for your event. And I think it's very important, but if you're going to publish a lunchtime, you got to stick to it.
Spot on.
And there's a ton of reasons to why, you know, whatever, but if you're going to publish it, stick to it. I'm going to suggest publishing everything. But.
This isn't the culture crafting. This is the Paul on the Published Word podcast.
Publish or perish. I don't know who said it, but it's time. I mean, am I wrong here, or am I putting too much importance on the time brackets?
No, not at all. I mean, same thing as I said about the 3-dayer and the, you know, the 2-dayer and the 1-dayers and all those things. People need to have their expectations not managed but set pre-event. They need to know what they're buying and what they're investing in. Yep. I'm very unlikely if you don't have a strong paint rubric, I'm very unlikely to spend the extra hours, you know, making everything sure everything's schmick and perfect and the transfers are on and whatnot. I'm much more likely to use that time instead to build new models, get things base coded and everything up to a base code level, and just play the models I want to play rather than going to the cabinet and seeing what's best and what I can get up to my best level, you know, across the board. So even just that, something as simple as that can really change what a lot of people do with up to hundreds of hours of their own time.
I believe that also in the idea of time, you have to establish what your dice down policy is.
I'm a firm believer in if you die hard dice down. I think hard dice down is the best way to go. And so,
but yeah, it might not be. I mean, you got to think of. I mean, I also agree. But if you're going to enforce
the best
it,
me and where I'm at. So that's not unanimously across the board, of course.
But if you're going to, if you take that stance at all, you've got to be consistent across all tables. That is something that will influence the culture of your event. If you're going to be consistent with the hard dice down.
Yes. And the worst thing you can be is inconsistent, I believe, especially to different demographics. No one wants to feel like they're, you know, playing a different game to somebody else.
Yeah. And I just say I think you want to discuss this stuff. So before every tournament, there is, I know you're going to, we've already established that everyone's going to publish some type of player document, that BNA.
Everyone's got to publish everything from now until the end of time.
In a post, in an Evite or whatever. But I think it bears repeating when you're opening up the ceremonies of things. You know, when like, hey, thanks for coming, everybody. These are the things you can expect over the event. And by the way, it's in your player document, your pamphlet.
Yeah.
But let me also tell you a few things that are important here as well, such as, hey, if you're going to call a judge over, you know, it'd be really helpful if you had the rule book open to the rule in question anyway.
Mm-hmm. Have the rule book open. Have the FAQs up. Yeah. Do the due diligence first.
Or something, or you say that, you know, this person, their word is the law, and if you call a judge over, you have to respect what XYZ person says.
Mm-hmm. I like that one a lot too.
There's lots of different ways to come about that, but you're telegraphing that so everyone knows what your position is, and so when this is all, like, not everything, but some of these things that you put in place are when friction inevitably occurs in some capacity.
I do like how you said inevitably. I think that rules discussions and the interactions of things is only going to get more prevalent the bigger the scene gets and the more rules depth we have per book, which seems to be going up quite a bit. And that's something that was another topic. But the deeper and more rules every army gets, the more times we're going to have interactions where we need an easy flow chart of how to resolve those things. And the best place you can always put that is in a player's pack.
Well, and also, don't underestimate the stakes. Like, you and I could be playing a game and we're playing on table 57, but we could be having the game of our lives. And Titches could be running hot, you know.
It's time to see whose cuisine reigns supreme. And, you know, if... yeah.
So these types of information bits are people knowing how you as an organizer, again, the one that's taking all the risk or the group of people that are taking all the risk or whatever for the any risk of all types coming up with this event, how you're going to come down on a subject, or at least how you're going to approach the subject. Maybe not how you're going to come down, but how you're going to approach the topic or the situation at hand.
Yeah. Approach, unpack.
Yeah.
Get, you know, show full transparency. It's really, really important. As a player, really important that you read your player packs, guys. Really important. I just put it out there. Put it right out there. If you rock up and you complain to your TO about something that was clearly stated in the player pack, you're a doofus. And guess what? I've done this. I am a doofus. So I think most people hopefully are having a chuckle about remembering the time they were a doofus too. But it's really important that we buy into these things. To support your TOs. Like, and if there's something that you are not happy with or you don't think is reflective of the community or you think that there's enough people that you can, you know, change the bit of the culture, approach your TOs at the first point of call if you want to get things changed or if you want to get things rewarded in a different manner.
On that note, if you are going to come and complain or anything like that to your TO, be proactive about it and come with at least one potential solution.
I was about to say, yeah, don't just walk in and dump your issues and walk away. Interact with them. They are just a community member the same as you who've decided to put a bunch of extra hats on their heads in order to make sure their friends have a good time.
Take some of that intellectual weight off of their mind. You know, like, they just spent maybe months organizing this thing, making every single decision to make sure that this thing went off. And they're probably sick and tired of making decisions and coming up with ideas. So just, like, be nice and maybe do some of that, like, mental legwork for them.
I do love that you said come with a solution. Come with, like, an option. Come with if you want to see something changed, what are you going to replace it with? You know, if you don't want to see that rewarded, what should we do instead? Or, exactly. You know, whatnot. And if you can, if you have the capacity to take something on or take a burden off them, do it.
Yep.
I mean,
like the buddy system.
I'm going to go further than that. Is how do you encourage that? You got to tell it, like, hey, you got to set the stage for feedback. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whether that be at the end of your event, you poll people or you have on the last mission sheet where they're turning in their final scores, there's a 3-question survey or something. I mean, I have seen that occur in the past. It's not often done, but I will say where it's happened is that there is there are some pretty successful events.
Yeah, I mean, if you just need to carbon copy something to get started, do it. Like, there's no one's gonna, you know, beat you up about that.
Yeah, I know this is an absolutely huge topic, and I don't think we're going to be able to cover everything. But I definitely want to like try to wrap up part one of this on the like what you can do and how you and to be deliberate with your stuff. And so things like you know, we're talking about the time of things is establish and think about, like, really think about what you, how you want to approach these things. And then maybe a little bit beyond yourself, you know, think about what is the best for the constituency, the people that you're actually trying to entertain. Because this is what this is. This is ultimately a fun interaction thing to do.
Spot on. And I mean, we can go even further. Like, if we wanted, the culture rabbit hole goes as deep as you wanted to go. Like, I'm sure if Red was here, he would have talked about the definition and said blah, 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 blah. And like, we could just mention the culture that you try and craft on this podcast, Paul. Like, the way you curate and you direct the content tries to craft a certain kind of culture for the listener. And if we wanted to go down that rabbit hole, that's another one we could talk about. The way we consume the content created in this space, the way we interact with each other on things like competitive 40k Facebook groups, etc., which could be a whole cesspool mire of their own fun culture, you know. But yeah, this is such a deep topic. I think we just scratched the surface. We just talked about like the immediate stuff.
Yeah, well, set out what type of you know, boat do you want to build, kind of thing. Like, what's, you know, what if you build it, they will come, type of thing. You know, you have to build something that people want to come to. And sometimes that can be your exact vision. Sometimes it needs to be a collaborative thing. And sometimes you might have to make compromises. But I think that if you've got a clear vision about, you know, but ultimately you do have to make something that's fun for you, that you want to, that you would want to participate in.
Yeah.
I think that everything successful has started out as like, yo, let me build something that I would actually go to.
Yeah. Yeah, great idea. Like, you know, most producers of film and like, I mean, very rare does an artist make an album where they're just like, man, I hate this music.
I don't know, man. Sometimes those checks get big, which is not what happens with the TO world.
But yeah, right? Who doesn't hate being paid? Right?
Yeah.
Do you know what? That 50 grand that I got for that one song felt bad, you know?
Yeah. Felt greasy every time I drive that Jaguar or whatever.
But, exactly. Right.
I don't have a Jaguar. This is not a me story. This is...
all that sweet FTN money that you don't make.
Well, what I'm saying is that you develop this thing and then really question, you know, what, not, don't analyze, don't get paralysis by analysis, you know, or analysis paralysis or whatever it is. Like, you got to eventually do it, but, you know, be deliberate. Think about how you're going to approach what the situations that will come up, such as time, such as interpretation of the terrain, such as mission, such as hobby, what engagement, what, you know, with like hobby excellence you want to have or not have, will you have sponsors, you know, there's
just how many games you're playing and how many points they are,
the store or the venue that you're playing in. And that's, I think that's the next thing we'll talk about on the next show is some of that stuff, like how to encourage a best sport, how to encourage a best painted, how do you set a highway for the best general, you know, those types of things. And so everyone, you know, can play how they want, kind of thing. If that's a concern for you, and then also how you engage the stores and maybe how you go about rewarding certain things that are beyond whatever that top prize is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right.
That's it. That's, I think that's all we have time for in this episode, but it's been a great discussion.
Yeah. Awesome discussion. We could talk about this forever. But that's nothing new.
We're
going to
talk about at least one more episode.
Yeah, we can even just turn it into like a 20 minutes every episode, like with the finishing, like the finishing moves, and alternate finishing moves. There's the I don't know. We need a snazzy name, but I don't have one. Chuck it in the comments. You've got a snazzy name for Culture Crafting.
Snazzy name and Culture Crafting. More. Look, I know this is, people are probably like, oh my goodness, what are they droning on about? But these. I do think that this engagement, this leaving our, you know, the confines of a single game and exploring a series of games that has an outcome is, in my opinion, a natural extension of the hobby that we talk about, the aspect of the hobby we talk about.
Absolutely, dude.
I'm looking forward to talking about next week, more about it next week. We'll see everybody.
See you then.
Bye, everybody.
Sept Tenets demand you tune in next week for the greater good, of course.